Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
This podcast was recorded Friday, October 1st at 11:20 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like state lawmakers, we'll actually meet a redistricting deadline for drawing a legislative district map.
They do have two more cracks at it.
Let's talk Ohio politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and the shrewd politicians out there, the Snollygosters who make a lot of noise and then decide, maybe we should table this controversial issue after all. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the abortion issue returns to the Ohio State House as lawmakers weigh a so-called trigger law.
But first, as we have most weeks in this podcast, we begin with COVID and the politics of COVID.
Still here. The pandemic is still here. The politics are still here. The latest on the spread is still not good, but at least it's not getting worse.
It appears the spread of the Delta variant has peaked in Ohio. The three-week average of daily new cases remains at about 6,500. That's about where it was 3 weeks ago. And if you look at the two-week average, it is down about 17%. Still, health officials say masks and vaccines are needed to keep us heading in the right direction, and many hospitals still straining to keep up because of the increase in patients and staffing shortages.
Yeah, not over yet, but there are signs of hope. At the State House, Republicans in the House thought they had a plan for a bill that would severely restrict businesses and schools from imposing vaccine mandates, but it did not happen.
Yeah, it seemed like the bill was really speeding toward passage without a hearing, even. It would not have banned vaccine mandates, but it would have allowed for some pretty broad exemptions. Those exemptions include medical reasons, religious reasons, demonstrating natural immunity to COVID because you have antibodies, and reasons of conscience.
Reasons of conscience. Try to define that.
Pretty broad, huh?
Supporters of the bill had hoped their bill would be acceptable to folks who do not like the mandates, and to business groups who don't want lawmakers imposing restrictions. But that did not happen. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce, the Ohio Business Roundtable both said the bill infringes on the rights of employers. Folks who want the mandate said it didn't go far enough, wanted to ban the mandate, said it didn't want to go far enough. So soon after all that came out, House leaders canceled the scheduled vote on the bill. So as of right now, vaccine mandates remain legal in Ohio.
Why is the Ohio Chamber of Commerce opposed to this? It seems like it gives employers cover.
No, I think they still thought that companies that want to impose mandates, allowing their employees to basically write a letter saying, my religious belief says I shouldn't get a vaccine, or my conscience says I shouldn't have a vaccine, was just too broad.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. I would think that. It seems like in the eyes of business owners, right? And it seems like a compromise to them that they're any anti-vax people can still get out of it. And I would think that the pro-vaccine people, the public health people, are more upset about this bill.
This bill made nobody happy.
Yeah,
that's
which
what
is
happened.
Which is sometimes good, right? You want to walk away from a deal where no one's totally happy.
They tried to be Solomon-esque here and split the baby, and it didn't work. I mean, and there are companies out there that want to impose vaccine mandates. They want to make their employees
without allowing reasons of conscience
get the vaccine. They want to keep their employees safe. They want to keep their customers safe. They want to be able to market, like say you're a contractor going into somebody's home. The client says to your guys and women have vaccines, and you can say, yeah, we make them. And I think the Chamber of Commerce doesn't like government telling what businesses can and cannot do. And I think that's why where their opposition came from. And then the folks who really wanted to ban the mandates, they still saw that businesses could require their employees to get vaccinated, and then the employees had to come up with a reason why they shouldn't be vaccinated.
Yeah, we're just so far down this road that to be frank, it just kind of sucks that we're still having this conversation. I mean, this is anybody who wants a vaccine at this point. I think has gotten it. I mean, people are still getting vaccinated at a pretty slow rate.
But these mandates are prompting people to get vaccinated. New York State this week required by state law that anyone who works in a healthcare facility had to get vaccinated or they would lose their job. Yeah. In the days before the deadline, vaccine rates among those folks surged. And we're seeing that as deadlines approach, that you have to get the vaccine. These are probably just procrastinators for the most part, but probably also some reluctant vaccine folks are saying, you know what, it's not worth losing my job over this. I'm going to get the shot.
And as this bill was written, all these exemptions that are laid out would not have applied to workers at children's hospitals or to ICU workers. So it's funny that lawmakers on one hand are saying, you can get out of the vaccine if you want. It's not that big a deal. But when it comes to child hospitals or when it comes to ICUs, they're saying, hold on, these vaccines are very effective. We need to vaccinate these workers. We can't let them out of this because the stakes are so high. But if you're just waiting tables or if you're just putting a roof on a house, we'll let you get out of it.
Yeah, I hope as the Delta variant is heading downhill, maybe. Am I being naive and perhaps overly optimistic?
Yes, you're being naive.
The political rhetoric will start to calm down as well. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it would be nice. And it was rhetorical, but yes, you are being naive. anyway, moving on now to a topic we already mentioned, abortion. Abortion protesters returned to the statehouse this week. The protesters were mainly supporters of abortion rights. They stormed the Senate chamber briefly for a moment, unfurled a banner before being kicked out. That came as the Senate this week began hearings on a bill that would make abortion immediately illegal in Ohio if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, this could happen as early as next spring when the court issues its decision on the Mississippi case. It will hear in a couple of months. Abortion opponents in Ohio want the state to be ready. They want to pass a law that would make performing an abortion or promoting abortion immediately a crime if the high court were to overturn Roe. It's called a trigger law, and 12 other states already have them.
And it's completely unsurprising given the nature of our legislature. I mean, they could pass the trigger law and have it happen immediately, or they could reconvene for an hour and have it happen already. I mean, they already have massive majorities, super majorities, in the House and Senate, and we have an anti-abortion governor. This would take 10 seconds to clear the legislature if Roe v. Wade were overturned. And so this trigger law is really just grandstanding, but it's effectively what would happen anyway without it.
But if you read the law, it really does foreshadow what could happen if the Supreme Court throws this issue back to the hands of state legislatures, which is what would happen if they overturn Roe versus Wade.
Probably, they could make some unexpected ruling. But
yeah, no, if they overturn Roe completely, then it goes back to the states to decide whether it should be illegal or not. And this bill has specific, you know, felony designations, misdemeanor designations. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a charge of abortion manslaughter, which would carry a really harsh sentence. I think 25 years in prison. There's other levels. You can get charged with a crime if you provide materials provide an abortion. So it targets physicians and healthcare workers. Does not target women who choose to have an abortion. But it does foreshadow the fight that's going to come. And it's not a slam dunk fight. It's a slam dunk in the legislature, but it's not a slam dunk in the state of Ohio.
No, and it's not a slam dunk at all in the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, this court has showed they're not shy about overturning precedent, but precedent does typically carry a lot of weight when you go to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, like you said, they take up this Mississippi case in December. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, polls show that a majority of Americans and a majority of Ohioans think, you know, as Hillary Clinton would say, abortion should be safe, rare, and legal. You know, that there should be regulations on the procedure, but that it should be legal.
Quinnipiac this summer did a poll. 61% of Ohioans support the Roe versus Wade decision. But they asked another question, do you support or oppose the heartbeat bill, which had been passed fairly recently? That's the one that has been put on hold by the courts. And 52% of Ohioans oppose that. So it's still a majority of Ohioans in these polls support some sort of abortion rights. But it depends on how you ask the question that it gets squishy. But it's not... The state is fairly divided, but there is a clear but small majority of Ohioans who think Roe should stand. So does the legislature go against that and pass this trigger law, or if the time comes, make abortion illegal in the state completely.
Well, the legislature routinely goes against the will of Ohioans. I mean, they're so gerrymandered that they're certainly to the right of the average Ohioan. I don't know, the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision is so fascinating because it hinges on this idea of viability, and it would just be the Wild West. It would be chaos for a little bit if Roe v. Wade were overturned. I mean, you have a lot of states, 12, maybe 13 if Ohio adopts this, that would have clear guidance in place. Are there any law, quote, trigger laws on the other side? I mean, in the liberal states where they say abortion would still be legal?
Not that I know of, but you can assume that New York, Massachusetts, the more liberal states,
Vermont, California,
are not going to make abortion illegal, but you're going to have a patchwork.
And you're going to have people flocking to those states to get those procedures, I would imagine.
Yeah, states like Mississippi, Alabama, you know, Arkansas, the southern states, the red, the deep red states certainly are going to make abortion illegal. And then we'll see what the political fallout is. I've always said that this is like the dog catching the car after chasing it for all these years. Republicans have been able to blame, abortion opponents have been able to blame the Supreme Court for this situation we're in, for making abortion legal. But now it's in their hands, and they have no one else to blame except themselves if there's backlash. And we'll see what happens.
Anyway, as I mentioned,
maybe it'll settle this issue once and for all.
Sure,
I doubt it.
Sure.
But, you know, it could settle it. If it goes on the ballot, that's what's going to happen. Eventually, if Roe is overturned by the courts, it's going to go on the ballot at some point in Ohio. And then the voters will decide, and we'll see what happens.
Now's their moment. I mean, there's such a conservative majority on the court that now is the moment that they have to move on this, you would think, abortion opponents.
And that's why you're seeing the abortion rights supporters galvanizing and protesting. There's the Women's March this weekend. There was the protest, the demonstration earlier this week. We'll see how many people show up, because right now the more fervent side has been the anti-abortion side in this issue. Now, if it gets taken away, you'll see if the abortion rights side galvanizes like the anti-abortion has for the past, you know, 50 years.
Anyway, as I mentioned, we have a legislature that is much more conservative than Ohio at large. That is because of gerrymandering, and that's the story that means so much that too few people really get fired up about it. Redistricting. State lawmakers had until Thursday, to approve a congressional map, but as expected, they did not meet that deadline.
No, they did not, and that's not a surprise. But it means that this process goes back to that 7-member redistricting commission that produced the state legislative maps a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that very popular map, the bipartisan map, right? If they can't come up with maps that gain Democratic support, and if lawmakers can't get enough Democratic votes, Ohio likely will have a heavily GOP-favored map that lasts only 4 years instead of 10, just like we do with the legislative map. And that's assuming that it is not struck down by the 3 lawsuits now that it faces. And you can bet every dollar you own that a heavily gerrymandered congressional map would also face lawsuits from groups like the ACLU and the National Democratic Redistricting Commission, which I did not even know existed until last week, and any other opponents of gerrymandering.
Democrats presented their maps this week, and it was much more competitive.
Shocking.
Surprise, surprise.
Shocking.
It could help Democrats win as many as 7 seats in Ohio. Right now they have 4. So they didn't draw it in a way to give them the majority.
Give them 7 more, as in 11?
No, it would give them
7
total.
So that's about right. It would be 7 Democrats and 8 Republicans.
Yeah,
about right.
55-45, which is where
state, how we're divided.
Yeah, and some of those districts would be competitive, so it's no guarantee that the Democrat would win that seat. So, but that's not going to go anywhere in the state legislature, and I fully expect we'll end up with a 4-year map.
Yeah, there's no chance. Maybe I shouldn't say no chance, right? Because we in the news business are not supposed to guarantee anything. But I cannot see any scenario where we have a map that is fair, that is going to lead to a 8-7 split. Republicans are not going to allow that. There's no incentive for them to allow that. Why would they care if there's a 4-year map instead of a 10-year map? They don't get they get paid the same either way. They get that same great government health care either way. Who cares?
A couple things to look for. Of course, Democrats would do the same thing if they were in charge.
They do in Illinois. They do, yeah.
Yeah, Democrats would do the same thing if they were in charge. There are a couple things to watch. You know, there could be some... There's a great call among a lot of folks that they should have districts that basically almost guarantee minority representation in Congress, namely African-American representatives. Joyce Beatty's district in Central Ohio is a district that was drawn to include a lot of African-American voters in the hopes that an African-American would be elected to Congress. And a lot of folks think that's important. So you could see the Republicans trying to work with the Legislative Black Caucus to say, you know, if we were to give you three solid districts that would heavily favor an African-American candidate to represent your part of Ohio in Congress, would you support this map? It's happened in other states. It's called packing and cracking, and it's kind of a cynical approach to politics.
Yeah, they put every black voter possible into the same district to keep them out of other ones.
And then they crack up the other districts so that the Republicans
win. It's how you get the old Pat Tiberi district here in Central Ohio that is just full of 50-year-old white people.
Yeah.
And then it's right next to Joyce Beatty's district.
But it's something to watch. I don't know if it's going to happen, but it's something that, you know, it's happened in other states and it's happened in other areas.
Yeah, I don't expect any bipartisan approach to this whatsoever. There's no incentive.
Unless the courts make them, and we'll see.
Anyway.
The timing on that, they're not going to hear this case until December. That's a long way away.
And they need a ruling
away.
By January.
I know. That's a long way away.
They need to get ahead of the February filing deadline. They need a ruling in January.
I thought they would try to hear this case a little sooner than that.
But well, don't hold your breath.
Maybe they've got Thanksgiving plans or something. Who knows?
Anyway, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. That's what we give out every week to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week, we're giving it to another DeWine, the other DeWine, Pat DeWine.
Yes. Speaking of redistricting, Supreme Court Justice Pat DeWine says he will not recuse himself from hearing cases about the state's redistricting maps approved by his father, Governor DeWine, who sits on the Redistricting Commission.
Yeah, Ohio's judicial code requires judges to disqualify themselves from cases when their impartiality might be questioned. Now, Justice DeWine has recused himself from other cases involving Governor DeWine, but those were challenges to the governor's executive powers. And now Justice DeWine says because his father is only one of seven members on this commission that he does not have as much of a role on it.
He is named as a defendant in these lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
So it has raised some eyebrows, not just Democratic eyebrows, but Republican eyebrows as well, that Pat DeWine is not going to recuse himself from this case. My guess is the Republicans don't want to take the risk of having a more narrow majority on the Supreme Court when these cases are heard and decided.
Yeah, I didn't know he was listed as a defendant on the lawsuits. I'm surprised he's not recusing himself at that point.
He's one of seven defendants, you know. That's what
he's a defendant on the lawsuit. All right, Pat DeWine, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. Congrats to you.
You know, he does have, I think Justice DeWine does have a good case. He makes the case that he's one of seven. He's not the only guy. It's not like it's Governor DeWine's health orders. Those were clearly his orders. He's one of a bunch here.
I think you're giving him a little too much credit.
I think he makes the case, you know, but
I don't know. Refusing to recuse yourself from a lawsuit involving your father, that's fine.
That's part of when you're a Supreme Court justice.
Politics are a tough business,
man. Your dad's the governor. You're going to cross paths every once in a while.
Politics are a tough business. That will do it for this week's edition. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, please email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, give us a good review on iTunes and just tell your buddies about us. For our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.